And good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with show before us or ahead. That uncontinuous play. Let me fix those. Happy Easter, happy Passover. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Laurent is off today because he is waiting for the Easter Bunny to come down the chimney and deliver eggs to his daughter. Something
so,
like that.
Do so I have the story right? Six more weeks of spring.
That's it. Okay. Yeah. I knew there was a portion of it that I was missing. But our guest today is Al James. He is the new... Are you regional director? What is the actual...
Corporate development officer.
Corporate development officer for the Trevor Project based here in Dallas. Trevor Project is based in New York.
New York and Los Angeles.
But we have a local office. Why?
Well, if you can believe it, the largest call volume of any region in the country comes from Texas and the South. So there's
really?
A real need here.
Yeah. Are you That's surprised?
Amazing. Let's... I'm not surprised, and yet I am.
Okay, well, let's just talk about it. For anybody who doesn't know what Trevor Project is, Trevor was a kid who committed suicide?
No. Not exactly. Peggy Rajke and Randy Stone came up with an Oscar-winning short film, and I believe you told me the category was live action.
Best short film live action.
Yes. And it's only about 20 minutes long, so I highly recommend Googling the Trevor Project Oscar film. It's worth a watch. It's very uplifting, as even though it's a very heavy subject matter, it is very uplifting. But basically, it's about a little boy named Trevor growing up and feeling different and not feeling like he fits in. And, you know, does contemplate taking his life. But I won't spoil any of the endings for anybody, but, you know, his... His parents aren't necessarily paying attention to what's going on, and it's done very well, and it's very inspiring and uplifting.
I remember when it won, I was like, "Wow, something gay won an Oscar."
That was one of the first
back in 1998.
Yeah. So, it was named after Trevor, who is the main character in this film. Why?
They got ready to air the film on HBO, and the executives came to the producers and said, "Hey, we're going to air this. There's going to be a call to action for, you know, people all across the country. What's out there? We need to be able to, you know, point them in the right direction for help if someone's in a similar situation to this kid, Trevor." And they looked around and noticed there wasn't anything, and they said, "Well, we got to do something about that." So they created the Trevor Project and named it after the film.
Okay, so did they even call Dallas? Because normally when you go to any of the national organizations and you say, well, is there one of these out there to take care of, they always say, yeah, call Dallas. They're so over-organized. They have to have one there. But we had nothing like that even.
Well, it was a national organization. You know, so we obviously take calls from all over the country, but mm-hmm. being that we're based in L.A. and New York, we are a little better known on both coasts. But unfortunately, the kids that need us are coming from this part of the country, and luckily they are, you know,
we're plenty well known here because, like you said, here's where a lot of the calls are. And it's something like twice as many are from here as from the other regions.
It's about 34.5% come from Texas and the South, I think.
That's
a third, more than a third of them.
That's scary to me.
Yeah.
It's scary, and it's heartbreaking to me.
And is it accurate to actually call it a suicide hotline? You're more than that, though.
We're the only nationally accredited organization offering crisis intervention and suicide prevention for LGBTQ youth.
Okay.
And we do that in a number of ways. Obviously, we have our Trevor Lifeline, which mm-hmm. is our hotline that is manned 24/7. We have call centers in both L.A. and New York, but they're manned 24/7. And
or
they
we
take
say staffed.
Calls. What's that?
We say staffed.
yes. And primarily, but with volunteers. So you these volunteers have to go through extensive training, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. to be able to, you know, be able to, take
that must be gut-wrenching volunteer work.
you know, it can be, but it also can be, you know, extremely rewarding.
Oh, sure.
And it does take, you know, a certain type of individual that is, one, willing to take on that commitment and go through the extensive training, because it's something like, you know, 40-plus hours of,
but you have to have so much empathy. And, you know, like, if I'm looking around this room, Patty couldn't do this work.
You know, I'm not sure I could.
I couldn't either.
You know, I contribute where I can, and so my skills are more in the fundraising realm of things. So I leave taking those heart-wrenching calls to the experts.
I couldn't either. Each and every call is that gut-wrenching. And these aren't quick calls.
No. Our studies show that the average call is about 25 minutes.
Now, so they're really spending time with these kids.
Yes. You know, in some cases, these kids feel like they have nowhere else to turn. So,
well, sometimes in Texas and the South, they don't.
Exactly. So, you know, luckily there is a Trevor Project there that can, you know, be a lifeline for them. And our administrative cost sort of averages out to be about $1 a minute. So we like to tell people, for as small as a $25 donation to the Trevor Project, you can potentially, you know, save and impact a life, since that average call time is about 25 minutes.
And if anybody wants information, we usually don't do this till the end of the show, but I'm going to keep repeating this. TrevorProject.org, not the Trevor Project, just TrevorProject.org.
The Trevor Project.
It is the Trevor Project.
The
okay,
Trevor
don't
Project.
Listen to me at all. When I give information, it's usually wrong. It's thetrevorproject.org. You can donate there. You can get information. You can get the phone number. But for anybody listening right now, the phone number is... Do you have it?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to have to look it up.
Okay. We'll get the phone number during the show. But if you go to thetrevorproject.org, you can get the phone number to call. There's a couple of other...
And Trevor is spelled T-R-E-V-O-R.
O-R, right. There are several other pieces to this. What is Trevor Chat?
Yes. You know, not everybody's comfortable picking up the phone and sort of spilling, you know, their problems out to a stranger over the phone. Some more people are more comfortable, you know, like maybe typing that message. Or, you know, maybe a transgender individual might be concerned that they might be misidentified by their voice as to what gender they are. Or you and I were discussing earlier, you know, their parents may be in the next room and you know, may not want them to hear. So we have extended our programs to really go where the millennials are communicating. So Trevor Chat, they can go online. It's kind of like an instant messaging service.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not comfortable, you know, picking up the phone and asking their questions, they can type them in. We've expanded that service also to Trevor Text. Again, the millennials are all about communicating with their, you know, smartphones and whatnot via text. So,
you know, the other thing about that I was thinking after we talked about this in the other room, and then I came in here to set up and did a wonderful job with that, I must say.
You did?
Yeah, because I forgot to set some of the equipment. Josh will be back next week, which is always a good thing, or the person who usually runs the board. One thing about lots of kids... There's only one computer in the house. There's one laptop. Everybody doesn't have their own laptop. Everybody has their own phone. So rather than typing these questions into your family computer, you might want to go into your own room and just text it.
Right. And right now our Trevor text service is only available 3 days a week, but we have a plan to every quarter add another day to that service until we're, you know, fully functional, up and running 7 days a week, because we're seeing that's really where the growth is for how people are contacting the Trevor Project.
And the reason for the for the text only being accepted once or 3 days a week is because there is a counselor on the other end texting back.
Correct. You know, it comes down to finances. You know, we've got to raise the money to be able to expand that program.
Well, you've been on the job, what, 2 months now?
Yep. I'm good, but
let's get with it. Let's get with it. That's some job you have, though, to finance that, because that's a huge chunk of work.
Sure. And, you know, obviously I've got counterparts, you know, in New York and California that are,
yeah,
you know,
but the money's going to come from here. We know that.
Charged with fundraising.
It's like that with every national organization. The money's going to come from here.
I think they recognize that, which is, you know, why they decided to move into this market and try to, since so many of the calls are coming from here, why not some of the dollars to support the programs as well?
Well, you know, when HRC was getting its new building, and it took the B'nai B'rith building. Is that how you say
B'nai
that?
B'rith.
B'nai B'rith. So it was a historic thing. The steering committee here raised $1 million for that effort.
Wow. Yeah.
And that was weeks after 9/11. So
Dallas is a philanthropic community, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we do. We are, as David said, we're very, very organized. We're almost overly organized. Mm-hmm.
If there's going to be an organization, if there's going to be one of those, we're going to have it. Do you know how many calls you get a day or a year or a...
You know, it's estimated that over 400,000 people since our inception have contacted us. So I'm not really sure how that breaks down.
It's 19 years, so divide that, but yeah. It increases because Trevor is well known now. But, if, I mean, 400,000 lives you've affected then.
Yeah, I think it's approaching like 50,000 calls a year.
Hmm. Do you know if many of the kids who call, and I'm saying kids, it's 13 to 24 is your target audience, so young adults. Do you know if many of them call back?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. We are partnering with a university that's sort of taking some of the data that we have collected through the years, and we're expecting a report. A couple of months ago, I was told April or May, so I'm hoping that report comes out soon.
June or July.
We should have, exactly. We should have, you know, a much better deep dive into sort of the statistics of, you know,
and some metrics about what's really happening. That's fascinating, though, that a university would take that on and use their resources and skills and obvious, you know, teaching moment to provide that. Because
sure.
that's quite an effort to analyze all of that stuff.
And it's a great windfall, you know, for us, because the data we're going to receive from that is just going to be very telling and help us, you know, serve our population better.
And Susie Baylor, I was thinking that you were about to say, I'm amazed that a university would take on a gay issue like that.
yes, I'm a Baylor bearer. Mm-hmm.
And my school this week, Albany, started a new program where they're tracking LGBT incidents around the world and coming out with reports on areas that are dangerous and areas that are good for the gay community just around the world, and they're partnering with some, you know, and
Baylor.
They won't be partnering with Baylor. They're partnering with some private companies up in New York to do that. But I saw that and I said, originally when I wrote the little piece that was in the paper, I was going to write, "Gee, I wonder what Baylor's contribution to this is going to be." Oh wait, they're still. They're still not acknowledging that women are getting, you know, whatever on campus. Anyway, I wanted to talk about some of the reasons that kids call and why specifically there needs to be a suicide hotline or a crisis intervention hotline specifically for gay kids. We need to take a break in a couple of minutes, so I want to hold off on that. But... do you have some of the statistics? Let's just go through those of suicide attempts that kids make in our community or young people make in our community.
Well, just in general, suicide is the second leading cause of death for young people between the ages of 10 and 24. And that accounts for 12% of deaths in that age group per year.
That's huge. That's scary huge.
It is a big number. And then 41% of transgender and gender nonconforming people have reported attempting suicide. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've heard that from transgender people who I think are stable. They haven't lost their jobs, or they lost a job, but very quickly got another job in another position. They were self-employed. I mean, I've heard that statistic so many times. It's disheartening.
It's pervasive, too. And I think a lot of people don't realize just how vulnerable our trans brothers and sisters are. We know that they're suffering a high rate of murder, especially trans women of color. Mm-hmm. And so this doesn't shock me, and I've heard that stat before. But
I have too, but it's
shocking in the massive loss mm-hmm. of incredible lives. People who feel so destitute that they want to take their own life. And so that's I think it's a wonderful thing that we have the Trevor Project, that someone in a moment of crisis can call and see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Exactly.
When they don't see anything.
You know, and my point on it was, we hear about the murders of trans women of color, and it's not like, oh, it's them. It's across the board mm-hmm. in the transgender community, and it's very, very upsetting that there's
41% is a lot.
41% is almost half. But that's attempt suicide. But the numbers of suicides is also very high. What about LGB?
Sure. Lesbian, gay, and bi youth are 4 times more likely to have attempted suicide than their heterosexual peers.
And what about kids who are just questioning? So they're less likely to identify already as
statistics show that questioning youth are 3 times more likely okay. to have attempted suicide than their straight peers. And then another interesting statistics is lesbian, gay, bi youth who come from a highly rejecting family are 8 times more likely.
So that's Texas in the
suicide.
That's Texas in the South. And 8 times more likely to attempt suicide.
And I think
suicide.
That's why you see this region of the country being our highest.
And let's talk about all these reasons that kids are even that there's this need for a crisis intervention hotline specifically for LGBT youth and young adults. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink. Lauren has the week off because it is Easter. He's out killing rabbits. And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
I'm Dallas City Councilman Adam Medrano, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and our guest is Al James. He is the... Give it to me again.
Corporate
Development Officer for the Trevor Project. Trevor Project is based in New York. If you want to look them up online, it's thetrevorproject.org. Did you find the phone number?
Oh, no.
No, okay.
I got too busy talking.
I want to talk a little bit about why LGBT kids, you know, all kids have problems in schools. What are some of the things that are going on among LGBT kids that's causing them to make 50,000 calls a year to the Trevor line?
You know, feeling like you're different and that you don't fit in can be a hard thing for any, you know, young person growing up. But you throw the LGBTQ, you know, card into the mix, and that's just sort of that extra, you know, added sense of, one, making them a target for bullying, mm-hmm. and, you know, obviously that plays into it. We were speaking right before the break about, you know, families that aren't accepting. So, you know, sometimes they're homeless. You know, they're kind of out on the streets trying to find their way at a very, very young age when they're not necessarily, you know, well-equipped to, mm-hmm. you know, do so. But, you know, just a number of reasons. Some, you know, religion sometimes plays into, you know.
And religion sort of folds over into that rejecting kind of family, not supportive family.
Right.
And, you know, from my own experience and from those of the experiences of others that I've known and grew up with, and there's a really kind of rigid place out there where families who are deeply religious in a fundamental kind of primitive way, literalist of the Bible and very rigid rules, It's not the kind of home life that's very welcoming for LGBT people. But more than that, there's a dynamic that happens that that tells the kid that they're really worse than any other human being.
Mm-hmm.
That they're going to go to hell, all of that fire and brimstone stuff. But there is a dynamic where this kids that are raised in this kind of environment will look at death before they'll look at leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Because oppressive.
Some of them are 14.
Exactly.
Kids are coming out younger now.
Exactly. But it's like that's better than that's more of a solution for them than trying to fight their way and leaving home with nothing. You know what I mean? Just because of the dynamic of being told how awful they are if they're gay.
Okay, but I want to mention one other thing. You mentioned, okay, if you come from a very fundamentalist home. Here's how I met Al. When was it? In February?
I think maybe early February.
Early February.
Mid-February.
BBYO, which is B'nai B'rith Youth Organization, had its national convention here in Dallas. There were about 4,000 kids. And they had, on Friday, they were here for a long weekend, and on Friday they had breakouts. And the breakouts were at each of the individual synagogues and probably at the Holocaust Museum and Jewish Federation and Jewish Family Services, and all these different groups had breakouts. So they asked Bethel B'nai, which is the predominantly LGBT synagogue, to host one for LGBT youth. And we started off with a panel. It was a fantastic panel with somebody from HRC, the national director of Trevor. There was a nationally known transgender figure who was there, and I can't think of her name, but you'd know her if you watched
Mark
CNN.
Isling?
No, it was not Mara. It was somebody I'd never met before, and you see her on CNN. When they need somebody to comment, they go to her. The director, producer, and writer of the TV show Transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several others. So it was a wonderful panel. And then they broke out into smaller groups. The Trevor group was the largest group. And then they came back again to talk about some of their experiences. And about 25, there were 100 kids that came to the LGBT breakout. And the kids, about 25 of them, talked about their own experiences. Now, these are Jewish kids. When I think Jewish, I think left-wing, liberal, you know, loudmouth, whatever. Because that's me. But a number of these kids had accessed the Trevor line. A number of them. It wasn't just one. You know, one, you say, okay, so one. It was like four or five of them that I heard about who had accessed the line out of 100 kids. That's a lot when you're coming from liberal families. Now, yes, there are some Jewish families that are not liberal. Some even voted for Trump.
Mm.
But I can't imagine a Jewish family that is so un-Jewish to reject your kid, we don't have hell to send people to. You're not going there because we don't have it. I found it so upsetting that at the end of this session, I introduced our gay cantor, and I introduced a couple of the gay board members from our synagogue, and I said to these kids, and if they belong to BBYO, chances are they go to a synagogue. I said, if you're at synagogue and you're ever feeling rejected, if you're in school and you need to talk to somebody at a synagogue, call us. We're here for you. I had three girls come up to me afterwards and hug me.
Wow.
You know, it was, I found that so upsetting because...
And if it could happen in that
It could happen there. You're saying fundamentalist kids.
Oh,
it
yeah.
can happen anywhere.
Speaking, I think it's on HBO, there was a documentary circulating it's the Mississippi L word, and you've got to see this because it's shocking and heartbreaking to me to know that this is happening. But this is why you have these calls. There are women. The L word, of course, was a show that portrayed lesbians in a real world sort of sense. And then there's the real L word that's on cable. And so this was a look at lesbians in Mississippi. And almost to a person, they said, I know I'm going to hell. I know that my soul is condemned to eternity. But this is who I am, and so this is the way I'm going to live while I'm on Earth. They have not only, they've succumbed to the whole pressure of it. Mm-hmm. Even though, I mean, they actually believe that they're going to hell. They believe that they're going to burn for eternity. And yet they're still going to be with who they love. And it's very, very sad to me that, I mean, I think these women are brave in their own way to sort of put that on to the side and pursue their lives and their happiness. But there's, imagine kids that can't handle any of that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That they're told they're going to hell, so much so that if a person, you know, pursues being who they are, they still believe that. Mm-hmm. they're not acting in fear of it or running from it, but they're put it to the side. And that's shocking and so disheartening to me as well, that mm-hmm. that's there. But if it's a reflective of what's going on in the South and across the South and in Texas, then that would certainly explain 34% of your calls are coming from Texas and the Deep South.
So
wow.
I have a question that probably can't be answered. Because religion is one of those things that it's just your belief, it's not... I don't want to say it's not real. It's not based on, and religious people mostly would disagree with me, on basic facts. It's based on beliefs, and your beliefs are what your beliefs are. And I'm not trying to disavow those beliefs. How do you talk to a kid whose family's beliefs are that this kid is bad, and try to talk that kid out of committing suicide, or that you're not a bad person?
I don't know.
I know that.
Yeah,
I don't know
how to answer that question, but that might need to have a follow-up show with somebody that does
with some of the counselors from Trevor.
But. We threw out some pretty strong statistics before the break mm-hmm. that, hopefully got some people's attention. But I want to throw one out that, really can help turn this around for a kid. Mm-hmm. Statistics show one supportive person can decrease an LGBTQ youth risk for suicide by 30%.
Wow.
So, that could be a parent, that could be a teacher, that could be a friend, anybody.
It can be somebody at a BBYO convention in Dallas who just says, call us if you need us.
One of those that you hugged.
And three girls came up and hugged me.
Yeah.
The fact that we could be, that could make the difference between one of these kids committing suicide, and I know for a fact that one of them was one of the 25 who got up and spoke, and she had called Trevor before.
And speaking of, I have that number.
Oh, okay.
I found it too.
866-488-7386. Okay. 866-488-7386. And we'll give it again in the next segment.
Yeah, and to access Trevor online, it's thetrevorproject.org. And you can go to Trevor Chat through the trevorproject.org website.
Correct. And, it's kind of like the other thing that we haven't mentioned, one of our services, we have something called Trevor Space, which is an online networking, social site, sort of like Facebook, but specifically for LGBTQ youth. They can speak to like-minded people like themselves from all over the country and, ask questions. It's secure.
How do you secure that? Because, Facebook is really not secure.
I think it's monitored by, we've got people that monitor the site. I think you've got to be kind of vetted to, join the site. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm on the fundraising side, but...
And that makes sense. Facebook is basically not monitored.
Right.
you post something and it's not until there's a complaint about somebody or something that's on there that they'll even look into it. But Decide is monitored.
I think you kind of have to, like, you know, ask to join and mm-hmm. be, you know, vetted and before you're approved.
Right. So your new friends are not women in scantily clad outfits from Indonesia. That's who keeps.
So do you have calls where kids, when we say crisis intervention, what kinds of crises are they in?
I know
they're like suicidal thoughts.
Sure.
For sure.
I mean, somebody's, you know, they're not always at the point of, you know, contemplating suicide. You know, someone could have been kicked out of their home and they're literally on the streets and homeless and, you know, don't know where to turn.
Yeah.
Our callers have a, you know, vast resource of, you know, agencies that work, you know, with certain issues that someone might be facing. So someone calls the Trevor hotline with that, you know, issue, they might get referred to, for instance, here in Dallas, to the Promise House. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, they take homeless youth, and in fact, they're, if they haven't already, they're getting ready to open a specific LGBTQ house.
Right.
Yeah, we had the executive director of Promise House on, back in December. They were hoping to have it open by December. It's just opening right now. It's going to house 4 LGBT youths who are 18 to 22. I'm not sure exactly the ages, but they decided over 18 so that they're not dealing with
minors.
With minors or with CPS.
Right.
Because a lot of them would be with CPS. But these are kids who are young enough that you're 18 and you're suddenly thrown out. What do you do? Now you have a place to live. It's not right where the other houses are. It's a little bit further, but also in Oak Cliff. And it's going to be wonderful.
You know, teaches kids awesome. Life skills you know, job skills and, you know, really just how to, you know, become independent and live on their own.
You know, I went about a week or two ago up to the North Texas Job Corps in McKinney, which has it's a full residential facility. And it teaches youth how to, and a lot of these have been troubled youth, either kind of getting into trouble with the police or they've been homeless, and they're getting job skills. And spoke to them about basically what the laws are here in Texas and around the country, because they had no clue. And so we talked about that. And just vibrant kids who seem really happy. And it was all LGBT focused. And these kids were just so many with rainbow flags, something on them, or the trans flag, and very much kids are very much about their identities today, you know, and out there and so supportive of each other. That's what I was just amazed by. They were so supportive of, you know, like wherever you choose to go in life, that's, you know, that's who you are and you be that. Mm-hmm. You go there.
Do you know, at this BBYO meeting that Beth Elbana hosted, a number of the kids had rainbow flags, and we thought that was kind of interesting at first, but then we talked to a couple of the kids and we realized because they had never walked into their own synagogue with a rainbow flag, but they could walk into ours, which I just loved. I thought that was just as sweet as could be. They just want to be who they are. So
that's exciting.
Yeah. You know, with homelessness here in Dallas, we have a great resource, and there are several other resources too. Depends on the age and several other things. When Promise House was setting up this new LGBT house, and the reason why are they doing just an LGBT house? What about a straight kid who's homeless? They have other facilities for them. But they found this is where the need is, and that's why they're doing it. But when they were looking for other programs that were similar and sent several people to go talk to them so that they don't have to reinvent the wheel, you know, what are the things that are needed? What are the things you found weren't needed? They had to go to Los Angeles. So you go from Dallas to Los Angeles. There are other states in between. Don't have things like this. You know, and I'm not going to ask you, so because you don't have the book of resources in front of you, so what do you do? And again, this is a question that you can't even answer. What do you do in Phoenix that doesn't have a program like this, or you know, Tucson or Albuquerque?
Or in Jackson, Mississippi.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, so what do you do? We're lucky because we've set up all of these types of resources here.
Do you have contacts through the South, like in state organizations or local organizations that you're going to be working with?
Our people that take the calls, you know, have an extensive, you know, list of resources by state, by city. But I don't have that list personally. But yeah, they've got an extensive list that they're constantly, you know, adding to and growing. And you know, if I guess a call and need does arise and that they don't have a resource for, they really, you know, try to find an interim solution. So it brings to the surface, you know, where a need might be, where a program or service doesn't exist.
You know, I would think one of the hardest places would be, and it's not one place, is rural America, where there are as many gay kids, percentage-wise, as there are anywhere else. And, you know, West Texas, I mean, the town of West, doesn't have a resource for them.
And if you go out to West Texas.
And if you go out to West Texas, no, I'm sure Lubbock doesn't have a whole lot.
And, you know, Odessa and Midland.
And I'm Pecos. Talking about the smaller towns. You know, the smaller towns. Where do you send these kids? Because they just don't have these resources. And it's very upsetting that, I'm glad we do, but it's hard. We need to take one more break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We're talking about the Trevor Project. Al James is our guest. You can reach the Trevor Project at thetrevorproject.org or 866-488-7386. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Hey guys, I'm CeeDee Curvin, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Laron will be back with us next week. Our guest is Al James. We're talking about the Trevor Project. Patty, you were just asking a question, and I only half caught what it was.
Oh, I said I could do adults call. And Al has stats on that.
We do. Not that
kids, you know, like over 18 aren't adults. But,
sure. We target 13 to 24-year-olds, but we don't turn anybody away that calls. And 26% of our callers are over the age of 24. Again, maybe the study that we're going to be getting is going to do a deeper dive into that. But I'm just speculating that part of that number is probably, you know, concerned mothers calling about a child that they, you know, sees headed.
Like, what are the signs of you know, potential suicide? I'm worried about my kid, and I don't even know what to look for.
You know, isolation, you know, really kind of withdrawing from friends and family, lack of interest in things that they usually, you know, show interest in, perhaps, you know, not eating like they should, you know, long periods of isolation, you know, I mean, obviously, a lot of these can be some of the same signs for, like, depression, which obviously sort of leads someone down that path. But,
and scarily, a lot of those things are kind of like just being a teenager.
True, you know? Very true.
But if you don't want to do what your parents are doing, you want to be in your room listening to your music, maybe chatting with your friends or whatever, and so you close the door and you're in there for hours. I mean, like, that could be mistaken for isolation.
But if your parent is really concerned about you that way, you might want to ask a school counselor to talk to the child. If it seems more serious than that, you might want to take your child for other counseling outside of the school. So, you know, it shouldn't be ignored. And if the counselor says, you know what, you have a normal, really rotten teenager there, you know, but you know that you did the right thing by, you know, by checking.
I can't even imagine the source of, you know, you think about what we were talking earlier about how these counselors are the ones who are trained with 40 plus hours of training to take these calls of kids in crisis. I have never done anything like that, but I can only imagine that being spurred on by the thought that, wow, you helped turn a kid in this direction, a positive direction, when they were going down a very negative path and maybe changed a life forever, saved a life. That's got to be rewarding. Do you guys have a volunteer program in all of these cities? Can people in Dallas volunteer to do those things? Or do you have to be near a call center?
Well, to actually take the calls, you do have to be near one of our call centers. And again, those are in LA and New York. But you can still go through some extensive training to be a Trevor chat volunteer and a Trevor text volunteer. But again, it's pretty extensive, training. It's a pretty big commitment, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Because you've got to go through quite a bit of training before, you're sort of set loose to...
So if you're a listener and you want to get involved with the Trevor Project and maybe do some of that because you have time and can be online with these kids and help them through their situations and such, do you have to go somewhere to get the training or can it be done online? Is there going to be a training class here?
I think it's all done virtually. So you just kind of do it online and or through conference calls and whatnot. So
the real opportunities that people in our listening area could call or email or go to the Trevor Project.org website and find a way to say I'd like to volunteer. I'd like to know more about the training. And
there's a link on our website about volunteering.
Great, that's a real opportunity for somebody to make a real difference in someone's life. Change a life.
Absolutely,
that's big.
In the last segment, we were talking about reasons the kids call in, and the basic reasons coming out. It's difficult for a lot of people. Bullying in schools, religion, homelessness, and those two we talked about quite a bit, but struggling to make sense of being different and trying to fit in. And that's probably, that's kind of not a specific thing. Did you have problems with that, Al, when you were a kid? When did you come out?
I sort of kind of figured it out when I was 19, but I wouldn't say I came out. I grew up in a small town in north central Louisiana. I moved to Dallas after college. Dallas was still a little too close to North Louisiana for me to completely, feel comfortable to come out. I ended up moving to Los Angeles, and it's sort of, I hate to say it, the miles and distance, between my family and, where I grew up made me more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I sort of, it took putting that distance between for me to just kind of find myself, so to speak.
No, really leave and say, this is me, I'm on my own. Who am I by myself?
And everybody's got their own, path that they go through and whatnot, but I was outed to my parents in an anonymous, mean-spirited letter I was living in Los Angeles.
Huh.
So
how old were you then?
I was in grad school, so early 20s, yeah. I guess. A former crazy roommate that, I caught stealing from me, and I told his parents, and this was how he got back at me. So, my parents came out, and, I discussed it with my dad, and I said, well, part of the letter's true. Yes, I'm gay, but, some of the mean-spirited stuff in the letter was not true. And then... it took baby steps for, my family to get comfortable with the idea, my parents, rather. My dad said, well, I feel like it's probably genetics. I'm probably somehow responsible. I still love you. But here's the caveat. He said, but don't bring it east with you. And I guess that was his way of saying, don't come home for Christmas and bring the boyfriend.
Have you ever?
Yes. I mean, we eventually got to that point, but it probably took 20 years to get to that point. But
well, my wife is from New Orleans, but she says of north central Louisiana, it's just more East Texas.
It's very different. Yeah, north and south Louisiana. I went to I went to college in southern Louisiana, Baton Rouge, and you know all the stereotypically things you think about Louisiana are not North Louisiana.
Right.
Cajun food.
It's just more East Texas.
Yes.
That's what she says.
Yes. Kind of redneck bobble belt.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we were coming up with our list here, struggling to make sense of being different and not fitting in. Now, part of this has to do with coming out, and kids are coming out a lot younger now. I came out at 19. You came out at 19. That was actually young. The number of people in my class that have come out since is more than double the number that were out at all in college. And I'm saying double of the ones that I know.
Right.
And we had a class of 3,000. So I didn't know everybody. But people come out, or kids come out younger now. They come out as teens. There are TV shows with gay characters. There's it's all over the web. It was not on the web when I was in high school.
We had, like, Billy Crystal on soap, you know?
Right, that was it, and that was after I graduated college, actually, mm-hmm. The year after. You know, I'm saying it wasn't on the web when I was in college. There wasn't a web then, obviously. So coming out younger, when you were talking about the distance that you were able to make before coming out, the distance from your family, when you're 14 and coming out, you can't do that.
Very true.
You know, kids are coming out at age 14, 15, 16. They're home. And it's dangerous for some of them to come out because they will be thrown out of their homes. They will be,
Potentially experience violence. And I think that's especially true in the South and in Texas. I think that there are families who still practice corporal punishment.
Mm-hmm.
There are families who obviously use violence in their home, and there's physical abuse that's widespread in our country. And I think there are going to be a lot of kids who feel physically threatened, if not, you know, kicked out of the house. Might even be a relief mm-hmm. for some kids, you know, because they feel like, you know, say, well, my parents will kill me. You know, that could be a real thing, not a figurative expression.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of deep-seated stuff here in the South.
And Al, you were dealing with your parents as an adult, young adult, but, you know, you were 22 or so when your father came to talk to you. You don't talk to a 22-year-old the same way you talk to a 14-year-old.
Exactly.
You know, I've talked to a number of the GSAs, the Gay Straight Alliances, in some of the Dallas high schools, and the kids will have questions like, the one that just haunts me is this kid that said she goes to church, and in church, other kids point at her and say, "You're going to hell." And what I told her was, because she was tough, I said, "You know, point your finger right back and say, 'How dare you judge me?'" You know, and I said to her, I asked her exactly where she was in school, and so I said, okay, so you have a year and a half left. It seems like eternity. Each week that you have to go to that church is going to be miserable for you, potentially, but know that in a year and a half you can go elsewhere, whereas you already could go elsewhere, so
right.
This is creative.
And did go elsewhere.
and that's what I'm saying. These are different problems than we had when we were coming out, you know. And I have to say, I did not come out like most people. You know, everybody says, in the 70s must have been so hard to come out. My college roommate became one of the original cult models. No, it wasn't difficult for me to come out. And struggling to make sense of being different and not fitting in. To me, all the others were strange, not me. Mm-hmm. I did not think of myself as odd at all. But again, I was lucky in high school. I had 4 male friends, 2 female friends. None of us were out in high school, but we all came out in college. So, and I don't remember ever discussing being gay with them. So I had my gay group without coming out as being gay, so we weren't subjected to bullying.
I did notice every time you sang, Broadway musical
going to numbers. Show tunes? No, they didn't. And so we weren't subjected to the same kind of bullying. Were you bullied in school at all, Al?
I was.
Yeah. You want to talk about that a little bit? Just and how that would trigger a phone call to Trevor.
Sure. I'm. Let me just sort of back up and say, you know, I didn't have it figured out in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, apparently some of my bullies had figured it out before me. But, you know, I had a very supportive family. You know, and I was, I wouldn't say not a popular kid in high school, but, you know, I didn't play on the football team. And that was sort of, you know, one area where, you know, the kids sort of came at me about.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I played basketball and tennis, but that wasn't, you know,
that wasn't good enough.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh.
You know, yeah, so, you know, there were tough times, but I just, you know, there were certain kids that I just sort of learned to try to avoid. You know, we all sort of have our own, you know, coping mechanisms, and older I got and the, you know, larger cities I moved to, it sort of became less and less of an issue.
Do you think bullying, though, from the time we were in school, and I say we, just all of us, all of our wide range.
We are of a certain age. You know,
well, but it's
here.
Over a more than a decade. Do you think that bullying has gotten much worse in the last 10 to 20 years?
Well, they've got cyberbullying to, you know, contend with that we didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just takes on a whole new level.
I can't even imagine how devastating that can be now. When it's one thing for somebody to like push you on the playground or in the hallway or slip a note to you and or show a note to other, you know, as many people can physically eyeball it. But to have it just broadcast, I mean, like potentially to dozens, hundreds at a time, that's mind blowing to me.
And you know, more people are prone to do that because they can kind of hide behind their computer screen. You know, they don't have to stand up, you know, pump their chest at you on the playground at school. Like, you know, they can be in their room and, you know, do
something
on their computer.
They have no consequences for themselves.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
They don't even have to be seen. Whereas, you know.
And, you know, how often are we hearing about the kid that, you know, committed suicide because they were just mercilessly, you know, cyberbullied? It's tragic.
There were, one of the school shootings just this year involved a kid who had been bullied. And probably for being gay. Not that he was out, but that was involved in the bullying. So, you know, kids being picked on for all kinds of reasons. I don't know if you're getting calls about this. You might not either. When I went to the to speak to one of the GSAs, it was right after the election, so everything we were going to talk about that day out the window. But do you know what those kids were petrified of? And this is a gay group, but it really affects kids, especially, I'm saying especially here in Texas and lots of parts of the country, immigration. Mm-hmm. They were just worried they're going to be deported. And that's not a gay issue, but it is a gay issue when they might be deported to a place that will be less welcoming than a city like Dallas is to them.
You know? The calls to our hotline after the election spiked tremendously, but and so did the donations, so we're, you know, grateful for that.
It's a great project to support.
We are just about out of time. If you would like more information about the Trevor Project, thetrevorproject.org, it has that in the front of it. The phone number to reach the Trevor Project, if you are between the ages of 13 and 24 and feel that you're in crisis for whatever reason, 866 or older, but that's the target right there. 866-488-7386. You can go online to Trevor Chat, Trevor Text, and what's the third Trevor?
Trevor Space.
Trevor Space. And you'll find it all on the website. It's a wonderful resource for LGBT kids and others. I would imagine that a number of the calls you get are from others, too. Al, I want to thank you for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I'll be coming again. It'd be great.
And good luck with your fundraising, because boy, is this needed.
Thank you.
Yeah.